Next on Fronteras, thousands of Central American children are waiting to see how the country will respond to their immigration cases. Immigrant advocates are trying to keep them from being sent back to the countries they fled from.
They will recruit them, they will threaten them. If they don't join their gang, they are subject to a retribution killing.
We hear from an organization helping unaccompanied Central American minors in San Antonio navigate the complex immigration legal system. Also on the program, a camping adventure gone wrong.
It was pitch black other than our headlights. And every 5 milliseconds, thunder just goes... And it was really scary and traumatizing.
A close call in the great outdoors at a Texas river. Those stories during Fronteras. First the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the growing Latino demographic. Fronteras is a multimedia collaboration among several public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez in San Antonio. More than 1,000 unaccompanied Central American minors continue to be temporarily housed at Joint Base San Antonio-Lackland. Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services, or RAICES, is helping these minors navigate the complex U.S. immigration system. RAICES Executive Director Jonathan Ryan spoke to Fronteras. He says his office is in its fifth week of providing legal services at Lackland. Some of these minors are staying with family members. What has happened to the children in which a family member could not be located?
Right. So the law requires that these unaccompanied minors are placed in the least restrictive setting possible. So the shelter has employees and staff whose job it is to locate and communicate with family members, guardians, sponsors who are here in the United States who can take custody of the children. When that's not a possibility, when a child is unable to reunify with a sponsor, they are then faced with the potential of going to immigration court unrepresented and alone and having to make the critical decisions about their legal case and the future of their lives without any kind of guidance or instruction.
So do you all represent those without a family member or even ones who do have a family member located?
With sponsors. Our main role is to connect them with a pro bono representative or attorney in their area who can help them in their immigration case. So when a child is unable to leave the shelter, we act more like a public defender and attempt to represent the child fully in immigration court.
And are family members for most of the children located?
90-95% of the children who are at these HHS facilities will reunify with some guardian or sponsor. Now, of those children who reunify, about 86% of them leave the state of Texas. With 14% of the reunification sponsors, Texas is the number one state for reunification of these unaccompanied minors, but it is true that, on the whole, the majority of them will leave the state of Texas.
I see. Are a portion of them entering into our foster care system?
A very small number of them. There are a limited number of foster beds that are reserved for children who are too young or too vulnerable to be placed into a shelter or in Lackland. The foster care programs for unaccompanied minors are federally funded. Although they are under the state licensing structure and may be part of a state program, the funding for that foster care originates with U.S. Health and Human Services and not with the state of Texas.
So the state won't be picking up the tab, right?
These are federally funded foster beds. There are also some foster beds that are available for those children who are unable to reunify and who have filed their request for humanitarian protection with the government and who are likely to succeed in that case. Therefore, these are children who are beginning the integration process into our society. They're attending local high schools, playing on the soccer team, involved with activities at school. And so we have children here in San Antonio who are in that status.
But what I'm hearing from the Obama administration is they say humanitarian crisis, but they don't see this as a refugee situation. What does it take to get refugee status and asylum in the U.S.?
Mm-hmm. depending on whether an individual is or is not in removal or deportation proceedings, they will file a request for asylum protection in different offices. So these children, because they are unaccompanied minors, have access to our asylum office, which is located in Houston, Texas. So children must file an application where they provide detailed information about their backgrounds, their family, and their history, the reasons why they have left their country, what harm, what threats have they suffered, have their families suffered, that has now caused them to have a credible fear of returning to their home country. They must provide evidence. They must corroborate their claims with documents, testimony from outside witnesses. It is a very burdensome, very complex process that almost no individual, adults included, could be expected to do by themselves, so let alone children who are unfamiliar with our legal system, who may not speak English or even Spanish, who must essentially defend a case in live court with an adverse immigration prosecutor and an immigration judge adjudicating their claim.
So it sounds like many of these children won't get that refugee status and will be deported.
It's quite possible, and the statistics show that a large number of the children are ordered removed. I think it's important, however, to note that we are screening many of the children who are at Lackland, and we have been screening children at these HHS shelters since 2008. We find an overwhelming majority of the children are eligible to defend their deportation from the United States. The critical factor is not eligibility, but whether or not these children are going to access an attorney or a representative who's competent within this niche, within a niche of the law, and who are affordable and accessible to these children who have very low resources and very little ability to pay for a private attorney.
What are the stories you're hearing? Can you share one?
The stories that we hear day in and day out from young boys and young girls who have fled Central America are stories of abuse and exploitation that begin in the home. They are compounded by the violence and lack of possibility or options in their cities and towns. We talk to young boys who, at the age of 12 or 13, are forced by the gangs who run their neighborhoods to choose whether they will join the gang or be killed by the gang or leave. So these gangs prey upon young children, particularly young boys. Once the gangs see that young boys are reaching adolescence, then it is their priority to claim that child for their side so that the other side, the other gang, cannot claim this child. So they will forcibly tattoo the boys. They will recruit them. They will threaten them. And if they don't join their gang, they are subject to a retribution killing. So many of the children who we see here are the children who were able, by hook or by crook, to get out after having been threatened by the gangs in some attempt to forcibly recruit them. So we see boys who flee this sort of circumstance. With young girls, the situation can be similar, but in some ways more devastating. Once these young girls, at the age of 12 or 13, they can be claimed as property by gang members. If they are unwilling to be the girlfriend to this gang member, then their lives are in danger. Many of the girls haven't left their homes for months, sometimes years. They've had to stop going to school. And once they have an opportunity to escape, they take that chance and they come here seeking our protection. We've heard stories of young children who have paid as much as $150 a day as rent just to stay alive.
And your organization, do you all go into the courtroom and help children fight for refugee status?
Our agency, RAISIS, represents a large number of these children who are unable to leave the shelters with a sponsor. We do attempt to fill the gap of the public defender. In our country, immigrants who are in deportation proceedings have no right to counsel. The reason for this is that our federal government views these proceedings as civil and not criminal in nature. And it's in the criminal courts where individuals have a right to assign counsel. Now, that's unfortunate because in the immigration context, the consequences of being ordered deported can be as great and sometimes even worse than the consequences of a criminal conviction. For example, many of these children, if ordered removed, could be sent home to their countries to be killed.
That was Jonathan Ryan, Executive Director of RAICES, Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services. Ryan says the need for their services is so high, they're hiring more bilingual attorneys and legal assistants to help through September. Young men and women all over are beginning to pack up their childhood bedrooms to head off to college. But for many Somali refugee girls, they're breaking ties with more than just the comforts of home. They're breaking cultural norms. Speak City Heights reporter Megan Burks looks at a rapid cultural shift that has Somali girls outpacing their male counterparts.
So I got honor roll, and then I got these awards from my teachers. I got one in econ.
18-year-old Khadija Osman just graduated from Arroyo Paseo Charter High School in City Heights. She's heading to UC Merced in the fall to study biochemistry. In Somalia, where her family is from, girls were much less likely to go to school than boys. Here in the United States, the girls are surpassing the boys in school. Generally, boys are more likely to drop out of school than girls. But leaders in the local Somali community say anecdotally that refugee boys are at a much higher risk of dropping out than the overall community. They say boys often are drawn into fights and, like many refugees, lack resources and struggle with language. For Osman and other Somali girls, the gender shift is tricky to navigate. Her family relies on her to help with the children, as is customary in the Somali culture.
There's girls who would love to go to college, but because of all the responsibilities put on us, you know, as like, you know, taking care of the house and helping parents with translations and appointments, you know, we're not able. And it's annoying because a lot of the guys take it for granted.
Osman believes that's why some refugee boys drop out. School is just not a priority for them. But Oliva Espin has a different take on why boys have a harder time than girls. She's a professor emerita at San Diego State who studies psychology in immigrant women.
Women find jobs immediately because women clean, cook, take care of children, take care of old people. They do the same thing they had always done.
Refugee men, on the other hand, often have skills or degrees that don't quite translate to the U.S. job market. Espin's own father worked as a lawyer in Cuba, but had to get a job sorting mail in the U.S. She says boys often see their fathers and older brothers stagnate, while girls see their mothers and sisters rising to meet the challenges of living in a new country.
Well, the women have to do things that they would not have done back there in terms of supporting the family, and the girls are seeing that. The other thing is most teachers are women. Boys don't have that many role models.
I head over to the Little Mogadishu district of City Heights to talk with Nuria Abshuro and her daughter Isha Aweso. East African shops, a mosque, and dozens of more recent Somali refugee families fill three or four blocks here. Both Aweso and Abshuro still wear headscarves and vibrant traditional dresses. But Abshuro is having to come to terms with her daughter's less traditional choices, including the sparkling stud in her right nostril. I ask Aweso to ask her mom, who doesn't speak English, whether she approves of the piercing.
She said it's good. It looks
did
funny.
Did she really say
that? Well, she's laughing. And then she did say, right now, she's like, I told you not to get it. I'm like, I told her that. I told her that you told me not to get it. But I asked her. I wanted it.
Like, turns out Abshuro did give her permission. And she's in full support of her daughter pursuing a college degree. Abshuro says she's really happy her daughter can go to school and get a job. It's something she wanted for herself, but by the time her family earned enough money to enroll her, she had to flee to a refugee camp in Kenya. Khadija Osman says a college degree will enable her and other Somali girls to play an even larger role in supporting their families.
The thought of telling my dad I want to go away for college was kind of terrifying. But then I spoke to him and I told him I want to go there. And he was like, at this point, he was like, you know, I trust you. So he gave me his blessings.
Both Khadija Osman and Isha Aweso say they hope to become high school teachers, serving as role models for the refugee girls and boys that come after them. Megan Burks, KPBS News.
Summertime can mean fun in the great outdoors, but everything doesn't always go as planned.
It was pitch black other than our headlights. And every 5 milliseconds, thunder just goes... And it was really scary and traumatizing.
Up next, a story of friendship and teamwork that began during a flash flood at a Texas river. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. On Memorial Day, two fathers and their four sons woke up to find their canoes swept away in a flash flood on the Pecos River in West Texas. Other campers were also pinned down in a spectacular setting bounded by jagged canyons and high desert. In this installment of a Fronteras series called Close Calls, Marfa Public Radio's Lorne Madelon reports on a story of teamwork and friendship that began in a flash flood in the middle of the night.
This is 9-year-old Francis Benton of Marfa, Texas.
It was just raging. So it was like...
And his friend, 11-year-old Griffin Carlin.
We grabbed as much stuff as we could, and we kept on carrying it up higher and higher.
Both were with their fathers and older brothers, all experienced river runners, when nature turned nasty, a flash flood.
And like, that's not wind, that's water, because our tent wasn't moving. So that was the water. And the river has a serious river cane problem. And so you just see these islands of river cane floating by.
We heard rushing water, the rushing of everybody getting up higher.
The Pecos is a 900-mile tributary of the Rio Grande. They made camp on high ground. Then the night unraveled.
And our clothes are soaking wet. I was in my underwear, and I had my hat.
And it was starting to rain. It was freezing cold. And by that time, my dad and my brother were out looking for a place to get out, and they stumbled upon a cave.
And so we just... walk up, and I'm not crying yet. Then there's this razor-sharp rock, and I start crying.
The group warmed up in the cave.
We just snuggled there. I lost my teddy bear. That was sad.
Their fathers left the cave to plan a route out.
And everybody was a bit scared. Our older brothers were saying everything's gonna be all right. They'll come back pretty soon. Yeah.
It was pitch black other than our headlights. And every 5 milliseconds, thunder just goes... And it was really scary and traumatizing.
At daybreak, the fathers planned to lead the children to their cars, parked several hours away.
And I don't have any shoes because the river took them away.
4 hours away in Big Bend National Park, Ranger Michael Ryan was off duty, waking up to enjoy Memorial Day with his wife and son.
And at this point, I began to fear the worst.
Ryan is close with the boys' families and knew they were out. He called a rancher. A search began.
So the Park Service launched several boats to move upstream. They found canoes, 3 canoes, tied together downstream in a heap of debris. Well, that's not a good sign.
A police helicopter was called in.
The helicopter passed over us about 3 times and didn't see us.
And when the helicopters hadn't seen anybody in that area, it just made everybody's heart sink.
On the ground, it was a tough slog on the way to the cars.
There was cactus and mesquite and this almost invisible cactus. And so the almost invisible cactus stings a lot, and it stings more when you pull it out. But you just have to pull it out or else it'll get deep into your skin. The walk was just hard, and there were like 3 canyons.
We finally found a place to get across, so we crossed over, got up on the other side, and we ran to a fence.
They scaled it.
We just walked until we got to this guy's house.
We were all very hungry, so we decided to look into the fridge.
And we weren't doing anything wrong, and we didn't feel like we were doing anything wrong. We just opened the fridge and got the Snicker bars, and so...
I did know that we were trespassing and stealing food, but we were all hungry, thirsty. We saw, way off in the distance, some smoke or something like that. And when they got closer, we could make out the name on the truck, Border Patrol.
They said, "You know who's looking for you, right?" I was like, "No, we don't, because we just thought we were fine."
Again, Ranger Michael Ryan.
Things like this can happen, and they can really be defining. You know, they can really show people who they are and where they are. And if we can pass those challenges to our children, I think that's a good thing to do for them.
We survived, and we learned something about helping each other and something about life.
I realized how many people love me.
I'm Lorne Madelon in Marfa, Texas.
And that's how it was.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations along the Southwest. You can find the entire audio for this program and past shows at tpr.org under the Programs tab. Share these stories with your friends on social media with our one-click buttons to Facebook and Twitter. Charanga Cakewalk composed this theme music. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thank you so much for listening.